everyone, and welcome to Minute 20 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week is Alan Sanders of The Wilder Ride. Welcome back, Alan.
Hey, I made it to the end of the week. Friday, the weekend is upon us. That's always fun, isn't it?
Yeah, unless you're traveling with Dell. Then I don't know about that.
True. If you're stuck with Dell trying to get home for Thanksgiving over a weekend, that may not be as fun.
Yeah, might be a little less fun. I don't know. So yesterday we discussed the whole fact that they finally get to this motel room and they have to deal, or Neil is dealing with all the problems in with the shower, and Dell is quietly unpacking and, you know, leaving his stuff all around the room. And then Dell walked over to the bed and he sat down and is looking lovingly at this picture. And that's how this minute begins. Okay, minute 20 begins with Dell sitting on the bed, staring at a picture frame. And it goes all the way till we see Neil beginning to dry off his back with a small towel. Yeah,
that is pretty story. Funny. My story for today relates exactly to this moment.
Okay, all right. Wait until the end of the minute for that.
I'll save it. I'll tease, but I know I was waiting for that one for this minute. Story.
Great. Looking forward to hearing that one. So Dell looks over at the picture, and then we actually get a shot of the picture. We see a picture of a woman. Now it's the actress who's used for this photo her name is Susan Isaacs. She was born in 1962, which means that she is 25 years old at the time that this movie was filmed. Now, I don't know if that looks like someone who's 25 or not. She does look a little bit older.
Yeah. Some people just have that. Unfortunately, some people just look older, but then it works for their favor later because it feels like they never age. Yeah. And then there's some people who always look like they're way too young to be in the grade they're in, which then they turn around and love when they get older in life and they realize, oh, I don't look like my people my age. So
exactly.
She definitely has more of a matriarchal look to her already.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, as we mentioned yesterday in the script, it mentions the fact that the picture looks 15 years old. So that would sort of make a little bit of sense there also.
Is a little bit of the 80s still poofy versus maybe a mid 70s or late 60s, which depending, how 15 years ago, I don't know that I would have thought about it until you read the script. I just thought it was a picture of somebody younger than him, but never would have put two and two together about anything else besides just that obviously a wife, because the way he treats it, and just maybe it's an old picture because he's just too lazy to get an update.
Right. That could be also. Now, how old?
My dad was like that his whole life. My dad carried a picture of my mom in his wallet from when they got married, and then another one from when she first had me. And I felt like that's always the pictures. And finally, when I was a teenager, I was like, Dad, do you want to put a newer picture of mom? He's like, I just never thought about it. She's always looked this way to me.
Okay. Now, how old do you think John Candy was when they made this movie?
I thought he was in his 40s. It kind of has that late 40s look.
Right. So John Candy was actually 37 when they made this movie. Okay. He was born in 1950. Okay. And he passed away at the age of 43. So he didn't make it as far as the way you think he looked. Okay. Now, and how old do you think?
He's the guy that kind of always looked older.
Yeah. And how old do you think Steve Martin was when they made this movie?
Oh, I thought he was in his mid to late 40s as well. Right. But so he's always had that salt and pepper gray hair, so he always has an older look.
Yes, yes. So he was 42 when they made this movie. So, yeah. So Susan Isaacs is an actress who has had 31 acting credits. Nothing really stood out for me on the type of TV credits that she has, except for the fact that she was on two episodes of Quantum Leap, which is one of my favorite shows. I don't remember her in those episodes. One of them was the wrestling episode, and there was another one where she was the daughter of this legendary gunfighter that Sam leapt into. So I don't remember. She wasn't that memorable from there, I guess. And she has 11 movie credits, including she was in Scrooged. She was in War of the Roses. She was in Delirious with John Candy just 4 years later, where she actually also played a character named Marie.
Wait, is that the one where he's the soap opera writer?
Yes, it is.
And everything he starts to write in his hotel room starts to come true in the town the next day?
No, it's he has amnesia and thinks that he's living in the soap opera world, if I remember correctly.
It's somebody, I remember he would write scenes and they would come true, or something would play out and he didn't like the way it was going and he would rewrite the script in his room and it would change the facts the next day. It's well worth watching just for that.
I don't think it's that movie. I think you're confusing that with something else, if I remember correctly. Because from what I remember, it's just somebody who has amnesia and is living the life of a he thinks he's living in the soap opera world.
Right. But he's able to manipulate with what he's writing. I remember that because he would always go back to his room and he would rewrite scenes because he thought it was all happening in his head.
I don't know. Could be. I don't remember.
We're thinking the same movie. Muriel Hemingway is in it. Raymond Burr's in it. Actually, my wife and I watched it not that long ago. And I was like, because I remember going, I've never heard of this movie.
Right. I saw it not long ago either, but I didn't like it that much, actually.
Yeah.
It will not be one of my top five John Candy movies. How's that?
I can tell you also it's not in my top five whenever we get to them.
Okay. Very good. So Dell looks lovingly at this picture, you know, just sitting there enjoying his cigarette by looking at it. And you see he gets a big smile on his face. And then we're back in the bathroom with Steve Martin getting ready, trying to figure out what to do in the shower. There's no water. He's standing there. And then the water starts coming out. And I'm not sure if the water is supposed to be hot or cold. I think it's supposed to be hot, but it could be that it's supposed to be freezing. Could be either.
I get that it's super hot because of the way he's trying to grab just enough of it to splash the soap out of his face, but he could barely touch it.
Right. It could be. No, but if you have freezing cold water, it's the same way.
Yeah. Okay. We won't know unless you've got the script and it says blast of hot water or a blast of icy cold water. But you asked my opinion based on his body acting. That's the first thing that pops in my head is that it's all of a sudden super hot.
Right. The script doesn't mention anything about that. So we'll have to just assume that we know the answer to that one.
What do you see? Like, especially towards the very end, just before it cuts out, the way he's acting, trying to almost like he's trying to reach to touch the faucet and he can't get to it.
Yeah. It's hot. That is hot. Yeah. he's burning himself when he keeps touching the water. You're right.
He's trying to leave. You see his hands like, I can't even reach it off.
Yeah. Okay. You are right.
It's very funny though.
Yeah. Now, what's funny is the fact he still has soap in his eyes. So he's like touching it blindly throughout the entire thing, trying to figure it out. Now we go back to Dell just sitting on the bed, you know, quite leisurely. He has his cigarette in his mouth. Remember earlier this week, we talked about the fact that there was a sign that says if you're smoking in bed, and we don't know what it means, but if you're smoking in bed, make sure.
Hopefully he's following. Yeah, because he sounds like a rule follower.
He's a rule follower, but he also does whatever he wants to do at the same time.
Right. I'm being hyper sarcastic.
Like, no, but I think he is a rule follower. He's a rule follower to a point. You know, he's not going to do anything beyond the scope of a rule. But once he's there, so he's gonna, you know, he's gonna move things a little bit to either side. You know, he's gonna play around with it, but he's still gonna stay within the parameters of a rule. That's what I think.
Okay. He's got a moral center, but it's ambiguous on the edges.
Yeah. That's what I would say.
Like, he has no problem helping somebody get a room with him, but then he has no problem taking $20 out of that guy's wallet.
No, but again, first of all, he didn't do that in the movie. He only did that in the script.
Right.
But maybe his point was at that point was is that he was going to, you know, give it back. You know, he's just borrowing that money. He'll give it to him when he takes his money out of his wallet later, when he finds his wallet. I don't know.
I think I've got the way to say it. This guy, Dell, lacks self-awareness.
Yes. Yes.
He doesn't understand when he is encroaching on someone's comfort. He doesn't understand what's not acceptable in a public situation. And even what we're going to see here in the bathroom, doesn't even really think about the concern or care of others when it comes to what he's doing for himself at the time.
Yeah, completely. So you also see on the bed that there's, besides the phone book that we talked about yesterday, there's also like a towel thrown over the bed, and there's another towel on next to the TV. There's like two towels on either side of the TV. And I'm wondering where that happened, because I don't remember yesterday seeing those towels there. Do you remember seeing them?
I don't remember. I didn't pay attention to the TV. And is that the phone book by his foot, or is that supposed to be a box? I can't tell.
I believe it's supposed to be the phone book. Remember we discussed it yesterday about the phone book being.
Right, but I see something open past it, and I'm wondering, I guess that could be the phone book. I was almost wondering if that was the edge of the pizza box that we know he's got, but it's kind of hidden by his foot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, first of all, I went back and just looked at yesterday's minute, and those towels are all there. Well, we just didn't notice them. Yeah, they're all there. There's even one on the bed. Is that the pizza box?
It's hard to tell, because does it look like the phone book from the other day? Because you were right. It looked like a phone book at the foot of the bed initially. And it may be. It may be. It just, for some reason, after now I've got it in my head because of what you said that they shot, that he's got the pizza box on the bed.
No, it is a pizza box. It's not the phone book. That is actually, it looks like a pizza box. Again, I could be wrong, but it looks like a pizza box.
That's what I thought based on the angle coming off of his one, I guess that's his slippers.
Yeah, I don't know what those are. They look like the, you know, the type of slippers that people use. You know, the, you see them a lot in old movies where people are walking through mountains on the snow. You know, they have their tennis racket shoes. So that's what looks like. The snow shoes. Well, yeah. So I don't know. It could be. That's very interesting.
But those little fuzzy with just a light sole, so to walk around the house. But yeah, you get the sense that they're just really thick and furry.
Yeah, completely. So he places the picture on the I don't even know what you want to call it on the little shelf, the nightstand. It's not even a nightstand because it's hanging. You know, it's connected to the bedboard.
Little shelf.
It's a suspended little shelf that he puts his. So it also shows the type of person that he is. You know, he's making himself at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, okay, this is where I'm going to be tonight. And even if you know what happens in the end of this movie, or if you don't know what happens in the end of this movie, I don't think it makes a difference because it shows the type of person that he is. He lives on the road. Okay, again, it doesn't matter if he has a home to go to or he doesn't have a home to go to, but when he's at work and when he's on the road, he makes every night his home, wherever he's staying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he takes a piece of wherever he believes home with him. He's got his pillow, he's got his slippers, he's got the picture.
Right.
Just makes him feel comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And then he looks over and he sees a little machine on the side of the bed, and it says on it, tingling relaxation and ease. So it's 25 cents to make the bed vibrate. Okay.
Yeah. One time in my whole life, we were staying at my mom and dad. It was just me and my one brother, because we only had the two of us at the time, the two brothers. We stayed at a hotel that had, quote, the magic fingers bed. And I was so mad my mom and dad wouldn't give me a quarter to do that. I don't know why. If they thought it was because it was a dirty thing or it was associated with motels where you come to for just a couple of hours. But for some reason, as a kid, I didn't know anything about that. I wanted to feel what the bed was like when it vibrated.
Exactly. So he puts that quarter in there and lets the bed start vibrating on its own. And he continues smoking. And now He reaches over to Neil's side of the bed to take the ashtray.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while he's doing this, we can actually hear the TV. The only dialogue we hear today is dialogue from the TV. And this, the quotes that we can hear are, you don't have to be a rock and roller to wear a pompadour. And you hear the expression, you're the boss. Now, I was trying to figure out where these are from. And to me, I listened to it. I must have listened to it about 20 times just to try to figure out who's talking. And it sounded to me like this was Bugs Bunny or something like that. And I went and did a really, really deep search to try and find a Bugs Bunny quote where he would have made this, you know, a cartoon where he made this type of quote. And I couldn't find it. Now, on IMDb, it mentions that it's from Underdog. But I wasn't able to
really.
But I looked through to try and find that out, and I couldn't find the quote on Underdog either, because it doesn't sound like something from Underdog. It really did sound to me like it was Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I was trying to see if it even matched up, which it doesn't necessarily have to match up what's on the screen.
Well, you can't see what's on the screen.
Put audio from something else,
right?
But it didn't look like a cartoon to me on the screen.
But it sounds like one, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does sound like one. It sounds like it was a cartoon, but then it looked like live action on the TV. We got such a hard angle.
Yeah.
But I didn't, it didn't have the color, and maybe because it's a, it may be a black and white TV, but with this angle, it's so hard to tell, but it didn't look like a cartoon.
Yeah. I wasn't able to figure that one out. So anyone out there who knows what this really is, if it is Underdog, tell us where it is in Underdog. Absolutely no clue. I searched it. I couldn't find that either. So, and what's annoying sometimes with IMDb is that you don't get the full gist of things. If someone is making a connection, a movie connection, you know, they just say, okay, Underdog, that's what's playing on the thing. They don't say which episode or anything like that. That would have been much more helpful. So
yes,
nothing we can do about that. That's what we got. So He's sitting on the bed. The bed is vibrating, and he continues smoking and is, you know, putting out his cigarette in the ashtray the whole time, you know, flicking the ash the whole way through, watching cartoons, I guess. Or if we go according to the script that we mentioned yesterday, he's watching some religious program. I don't know. It doesn't sound like they would say rock and roller and pompadour on a religious program, but you never know. Maybe Jerry Falwell did have things to say like that. I don't know.
That's the other thing. If it's supposed to be a cartoon, why would they be showing Underdog in the middle of the night? I mean, no kids are up to watch cartoons.
I don't know. Maybe he's on Nick at Night. I don't know.
Yeah. Before there was Nick at Night.
No, there was Nickelodeon in the 80s.
Yes, there was. But I don't think they were showing Underdog cartoons in Wichita, Kansas in 1987.
Probably not. But I'm saying it's within the realm of possibility. It is possible. It's not impossible. It's possible.
Mm.
Okay, fine. Fine.
I'm going to vote. I'm voting nay.
Okay, so you tell me what it is that he's listening to.
I don't know, because like I said, the first thing I thought of was, it sounds like it might be a cartoon, but it doesn't look like a cartoon, so I have no idea what he's watching.
Right, but again, rock and roller and pompadour. I mean, you'd think maybe it's like an Elvis Presley phrase or something like that, but it's not. I mean, I couldn't – every search I did for those words on the internet did not bring up any movie that has both of those words right next to each other.
Hmm. That's strange.
Don't know.
You would have thought some movie nerd at some point would have come up with what that scene is on the television playing.
The closest I came was
a real scene, unless it was just a fake thing that John Hughes created.
That could be true. The closest I came was, I found a website that has movie quotes where people have to guess what movie it's from, and they use this quote. You know, and the answer is obviously Plane Shares and Automobiles, not Underdog. So that didn't really help.
Mm.
But that's also not a fair quote to give someone for a movie, you know, to quote something that's on TV. It's not like they're saying, I'll buy that for a dollar, or, right, you know, the other RoboCop type of stuff. Who knows? Then we go back to Neil in the shower. He's finally figured out a way of washing himself off. And he pulls back the curtain, and he looks completely exhausted from the shower. And then we get a shot of the sink area.
Oh, this is one you have to freeze frame. If you've not done this watching the movie, you owe yourself the time because there's too much to take in the speed at which it goes by. You've got to pause it.
That is correct. Now, first of all, we go back to the musical keys. We get the dun dun dun, like a musical key that this is not what you would expect. Now, there's just so much here.
Every time I look at this bathroom sink, it's hysterical.
Right. So, I mean, you can see a whole bunch of things here. First of all, the whole area is a complete mess. There are four wet towels strewn on this area. You see a nail clipper. You see a hair dryer, toothpaste. You see there's an ashtray with cigarettes in it. Okay. So my first question is when did Dale have time to do all this?
I don't know. The fact that
it's not mentioned.
The fact he left it all out. But you know, the one thing that stands out to me, and I never, honestly to God, the first thing I noticed watching it through. Towels. The second was just generic mess. You left all your crap. But then I look, you've got an open bottle of
Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, but Mylocon. You got Mylocon gas tablets. You've got right. An open bottle of Pepto-Bismol closest to frame that looks like it's half drunk. You've got another bottle of what looks like Rolaids. You've got a Phillips Milk of Magnesia. You've got another Pepto-Bismol in his little toiletry bag. Like, this dude is just nothing but gas and indigestion nonstop.
Correct. So I wanted to actually go and discuss some of the various things that we see here. So Listerine. When do you think Listerine was invented?
It's probably been around for a long time, given that the original Listerine flavor tastes almost like gasoline.
Okay, so Listerine was actually pioneered as an antiseptic for surgery in Scotland in 1865 by a doctor named Joseph Lister. Okay. Then in 1879, this guy named Joseph Lawrence in St. Louis decided to use it he brought it to America and wanted to use it for other things. So it's an alcoholic-based formula that includes eucalyptol, menthol, methyl, salicylate, and thymol. And nobody knows the exact measurements of all these because that's still a trade secret. It was used originally as a floor cleaner and as a cure for gonorrhea.
Oh.
Okay, yes. And then And then in the 1920s, it began to be used as a solution for chronic halitosis.
Yeah.
Okay. And at that point, that's when people started becoming more aware of the fact that there was something known as halitosis. Mm. People didn't care beforehand that, you know, people had bad breath. So there's a famous quote that says Listerine did not make mouthwash as much as it made halitosis. Meaning that people became more aware of the fact that other people had bad breath once they started having Listerine and they were trying to solve this problem. So they were basically trying to solve a problem that people didn't care about and until they made them care about it.
You know what's crazy? Because you look at that size, like that's the full size. That's not a travel size bottle of Listerine.
Yeah.
You've got a full size bottle of Pepto-Bismol in the kit, one that's outside the kit. You got all these bottles. There's no way all of that fits in his shaving kit / toiletry kit. No way.
That is definitely true.
Also just noticed behind the Mylocon gas tablets is a box of Preparation H. Behind that is foot powder. So the guy's got athlete's foot. He's got hemorrhoids. He's got bad gas and halitosis. What a fun sleeping companion.
Completely. Now, I didn't finish about Listerine, though.
Oh, sorry.
So in the first 7 years after they started using it to fight halitosis, their revenues rose from $115,000 a year to $18 million.
Wow.
In the 1930s. Think about that. That's just unbelievable.
Change your branding and suddenly you're a millionaire.
Completely. And there are many false claims over the years that Listerine cures other things. Okay. There were false claims that it cures dandruff. If you put it on your head, okay. There are false claims that it will help with colds or with sore throats. Or if you want to just talk about what we're dealing, all we're dealing with now, or hopefully when this is released, we're no longer dealing with it, but there's actually false information that Listerine fights off COVID.
Wow.
And they ended up having to change the label in 2020 saying that Listerine does not fight COVID because so many people believed that it did.
Wow. And obviously we're talking about the basic Corona kind of virus, not the novel that came out, a novel specific one that we were dealing with, but still I can imagine with the alcohol in it, people just assume, well, it burns in my
It'll
mouth.
Kill anything.
The germs in my mouth must kill all germs, right?
Exactly.
I want to know though,
okay,
because when this was initially sold as a floor cleaner and then suddenly someone got the bright idea, it helps with bad breath, and on a dime, they suddenly become a multi-million dollar company. You know there was some grandmother or grandfather who was aghast or like, I was just cleaning the floor with that, and now you're gargling with it.
I believe you are correct.
These kids are crazy. They're using floor cleaner to make their breath smell good. Oh, my God.
Definitely. All right. So let's move along to Pepto-Bismol. What do you know about Pepto-Bismol?
I remember as a kid, that was a big thing that my mom and dad would have in the cupboard if you had an upset stomach, if you had indigestion, or if you had diarrhea. It seemed to be like a one-size-fits-all for any kind of gastrointestinal problems.
Very good. So it treats nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upper stomach problems, and diarrhea. Very good. It's actually made from
our share of Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah. It's made from bismuth subsalicylate. That's what it's called. Yeah. It actually, and I remember this when I didn't remember it until I wrote it down or I read it again, that it causes people to have black tongue and black stools. I remember when we'd have Pepto-Bismol, I remember my mother used to always tell me, don't be scared. It's going to change your stool to be very dark also.
Huh.
So
never thought about it.
Okay.
Yeah. First time I've heard
and
about
if
it.
You, and if you use it, and if you use it too much, it can actually cause toxicity.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay. So in other words, it's a poison.
Good.
Nice. It was developed in the early 1900s. And was used to treat infant cholera. Okay. Then in 1919, they actually started selling it as Pepto-Bismol. And you can get it in chewable tablets, swallowable caplets, or in the original form, which Dell likes to use, the thick liquid.
So what are we learning here, though, folks, is that when people come up with some kind of a new medicine, some kind of a new thing to help cure something, 10, 15 years down the road, we realize, okay, it never worked for what we thought, but here's something new we can try.
Yeah, let's try with this. Maybe that'll work.
Infant cholera. I can't even imagine trying to get an infant to swallow Pepto-Bismol.
I don't know. Now, you mentioned the fact that we see a bunch of different antacids there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, okay, what do you know about antacids?
Well, obviously, when you have indigestion or heartburn, when you've got reflux, it's too much stomach acid. And so antacids literally are antacid. They're bases that you take to help neutralize, hopefully, the acidic content of your stomach.
Wow. You see, you really are. You really do know more than just about movies, Alan.
Well,
it neutralizes.
I'm a big fan of Tums here in our house when we have too much chili. You might need one or two of those before you go to bed.
There you go. So it neutralizes stomach acidity when you have heartburn, indigestion, or an upset stomach. It's also used for either constipation and diarrhea. And most people deal with it when they have gastroesophageal reflux disease, as you mentioned. Very good. If you use it too much, it can actually cause kidney stones.
Good to know.
Okay. The liquid form is called milk of magnesia. And the liquid form actually causes quicker relief than the tablets themselves. They have these chewable tablets, which are made of calcium, magnesium, aluminum, and sodium. And then they have something known as an effervescent tablet. Do you know what that is?
Is that the pop, plop, fizz, fizz, you know, kind of really?
Very good. Alka-Seltzer. Yes. Very good. See, Alan, you're great here. You know as much as I can find on Wikipedia. Yeah.
Well, it's all everybody's products so goes back in now what we would consider today nostalgic conversation for these ads and things, because the way these look, they're not Mesmo looking classic like this, but almost all of this has either been updated in branding and look. None of the stuff pretty much looks this way anymore, which is hysterical.
Right. That's true. That's very true. So what I always remember about these tablets, so you have the Alka-Seltzer, Gaviscon, and Eno. Those are the three main ones that people use. Now, do you remember the commercial from Alka-Seltzer where you see a guy sitting on a bed and he says to his wife, "I can't believe I ate the whole thing. I can't believe I ate the whole thing."
Oh, yeah. No, and the commercial, like I said, I already kind of sang it, but the whole, especially when you had the kid's voice singing, you know, the plop, plop, fizz, fizz.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief fizz.
Can I tell you, I have never in my life tried Alka-Seltzer. I've had almost everything else on this counter at some point in my life from my parents or just me as a teenager as a young adult and then having kids of my own, but never tried Alka-Seltzer. Have you?
Okay. Even preparation age?
Okay. I'm talking about the antacids here. We're talking about the antacids. I've had chewable Tums. I know when I was a kid, we did Pepto-Bismol. I know I've had milk of magnesia, Philips, milk of magnesia.
Yeah.
I never tried the Mylocon, exactly. But I remember that name for gas. But, you know, it's like he's taking Mylocon right. And Philips and Pepto-Bismol. I mean, I guess he doesn't know which is going to work better, so he just does them all.
Right. I wonder if someone were actually trying to figure out if all the caps that are sitting around would actually fit on these bottles. You know, if you can, like, you know, do a puzzle. Because we see a bunch of caps that are there, too.
I can tell you the pink cap close to the open Pepto-Bismol, that goes with that. And then the black cap is like for the Listerine.
Okay, could be. But again, he leaves so much stuff on there. And, I mean, the fact that he leaves his nail clippers open like that also open is there,
it
funny.
Looks like the toothpaste does not have the cap on it. And it's just lying on the edge of the sink. A dirty sink at that.
Yeah, completely. Well, next week we'll talk about how dirty it really gets. But... You know. Okay, so the final thing I wanted to discuss that's on this this rack here, the sink, is Q-tips.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you know about Q-tips?
So as a swab, that's a name brand Q-tip. They're supposed to be called cotton swabs. Cotton swabs. But Q-tips is what we always call any kind of a thing that you use for cleaning your ears. That's usually what we use them for. I guess you could use them to apply alcohol or other things to cuts or other things, but almost always use them for cleaning your ears.
Okay, very good. So in 1923, Polish-American Leo Gerstenzing saw his wife attach two wads of cotton to a toothpick in order to clean their little infant's ears. And he said, "Wow, that's such a great idea. I'm going to market these." And he created them, and he called them – they were called baby gays. They were intended only for infants at the beginning. And then they renamed them Q-tips baby gays, with the Q standing for – what do you think Q stands for?
Quality.
Very good.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Yes. You're pulling my malaria.
No, not at all. Not at all. And eventually they dropped the baby gaze part of it, and it just became known as Q-tips. And as you mentioned, it has become the generic name, just like we say Kleenex for tissues. You know, there's a lot of them out there.
We say Band-Aid for all kind of bandages.
That's right. Correct. So, yeah, that That's what I have about that. I mean, I could have gone on. I could have done more research on some of the other things there, but I think we got a pretty good idea of the type of things that Dell has left on this counter.
The only thing I wanted to mention, and I don't know if it is what it is, but it reminds me so much, and it's hard to tell because the label is blocked by the open Pepto-Bismol bottle, is that Aqua Velva? Because that was a huge thing in the 80s, Aqua Velva for men. Like the cheap aftershave that you can afford, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
That's what it looks like to me, Aquavelva.
In the 80s, I never used Aquavelva.
I never did, but
I haven't since either, but...
Yeah, no, I can honestly say I never fell into the trap, and thankfully my girls never bought me that, but as a young kid growing up, buying something for my dad for Christmas, it was like, oh, I remember the commercials, the Aquavelva man. I'm like, get dad Aquavelva. My mom like, okay. So I would always like get my dad a thing. I don't even know if he even liked it or ever used it, but I just always thought because of TV commercials, getting my dad Aquavelva aftershave.
Now, what do you think that is? There's like a something brown, like a, it looks like a brown bag or maybe like a large wallet right next to the hairdryer. I can't figure out what that is. Could that be another bag that he was using to hold some of this stuff in?
I don't know. I can't tell.
But I mean, it looks strange, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. And the framing that here, because I'm looking at it on my computer monitor, so I don't have exactly like widescreen 16:9 here, but it's hard to see.
Yeah, no, I can't tell what that is. All right. Okay, well, I guess that'll remain a mystery for us. So Neil takes one look at this whole thing and is just in complete shock. He can't believe that there is so much stuff there. And
let me ask you this question, because he's looking at it. Wouldn't he have noticed that getting into the shower? Or did all this happen while he was in the shower, since we talked about that there was some things going on while he was in the shower that was left out of the script? Because it feels
I believe this all happened when he was in the shower.
Okay.
There's no way that it didn't, but again, it doesn't make any sense, because if Dell took a shower before him, so then it should all be there. But if Dell took a shower after him, then it's not there yet. Where would all these towels get wet from?
Well, just the sheer mess, because he's looking around in disgust. Obviously, Dell went and took his shower first. He's the one wearing the robe. He's the one wearing the slippers. He's having the evening smoke and having the magic fingers bed. So it's obvious Dell went first. It's just weird that we're getting this. And of course, we don't think about it until we slow it down. Why wouldn't he have noticed all of the garbage and there were no towels before he went in the shower?
Right. Exactly. I don't have an interview, which is further proof that possibly some of this happened while he was in the shower. Mm-hmm. You know, as we mentioned in the script, that Dell went and was using the toilet. So I don't know. No idea. Because, again, it's not mentioned in the script and we don't see it here. So I don't know what they're trying to tell us here. But it just makes absolutely no sense that all of these towels would be so drenched at this point, unless there was a leak somewhere and the towels happened to be, I don't know, all the water got in, I don't know.
No, you're gonna have to wait for my story.
All right.
I can tell you I have been Steve Martin in this situation.
All right. We're gonna get there. We're almost there. So Steve Martin, Neil looks around and then he looks at the towel rack and notices one little pink hand towel that's sitting there. And he doesn't know what he's going to do. And then he walks out, he gets out of the shower and puts his foot down on the first towel that's there, which you can see is just completely drenched because water starts seeping out of it as soon as his foot touches it. Now, it grosses me out just watching that, you know, knowing that it's someone else has done this. And then we see that there's a newspaper on the floor that is also completely wet, which goes back to what we were saying about Dell, you know, reading the newspaper there. He just throws it on the floor. I don't know. And the music here is just unbelievable. You know, we get those cartoonish musical tones that we were talking about earlier. And then he puts his second foot on the floor, which again, ick, that's just too much. And then he takes that little towel and starts looking at it and opens it up and starts dabbing his face with it.
And just gingerly patting his eyes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to try to go too quickly. Save it. Go slow.
Well, because you don't want the washcloth to get too wet too quickly.
Take your time.
Exactly.
Air dry.
Well, he's got the hair dryer there. He could probably use that, try and air dry something else. Don't know. So you have anything else for this minute?
No, I think we've dissected it as much as you can.
Pretty much. We could have gone deeper, but I think we did enough. So the script only has one little minor discrepancy where it says that there are two washcloths for him instead of one. It's the only difference. Doesn't make a difference. I think it's funnier that there is only one.
Yeah, so, funnier for one.
Yeah, so there's really nothing else to say about that. So every Friday we do Weekend Candy, where my guests will give their top five John Candy films. So, Alan, you want to tell us your top five Weekend Candy?
All right. I know you're taking notes, and you're going to eventually have a final tally of all your guests at the end of the season.
Yes,
so I will start off with number five. Loved it when it came out. I still think it's funny. It's a silly Disney flick, but Cool Runnings, number five.
All right.
Number four, I think the first R-rated comedy movie I ever saw, Stripes. Now, I don't know if that's if you consider that a full John Candy movie, but John Candy is in Stripes.
Okay. That is true. He's there. That's what it doesn't have to be just a full John Candy movie. Don't worry about that.
Number three, The Great Outdoors.
The Great Outdoors, I remember seeing in the theater, and I really enjoyed it when I saw it. The thing that always gets me is the steak scene.
Right. Trying to eat the was it 5-pound steak, trying to do it all in one sitting?
Something like that, yeah.
Number two, Uncle Buck. Fun movie, another John Hughes flick. And no surprise, my number one favorite John Candy film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. So far, three out of four of our guests have chosen this as their favorite John Candy movie. So
I think if you look at the other movies where he's got a similar type of character, whether he's the guard in National Lampoon Vacation, whether he's Uncle Buck, Great Outdoors, even to an extent playing in Spaceballs. This movie is the one where he's like at the height of this kind of a character. Goofy sidekick. You want to hate him and love him at the same time. You can't fault him, even though he's got so many faults, and he's just genuinely funny.
Yeah, very true. All right, so we've now reached the point where Alan has been waiting all day to get to. Every day we do the segment Off the Beaten Track, where myself or my guest will tell a little adventure or misadventure that they may have had over the course of their lives. So, Alan, what misadventure do you want to tell us about a little washcloth in a bathroom or whatever?
So my youngest daughter was involved in gymnastics from age 5 until almost through high school. We were hoping that if she stuck with it, she might go to college on scholarship money. Decided in the middle of her high school years that her social life and boys were more important, and it, of course, crushed us. But one trip, because you always take regional trips in gymnastics, we had a hotel room, and it was me and my wife and Sophie and one of Sophie's friends that we were sort of being the chaperone for. And so because they take so long to get their hair done, anybody who's listening, if you've got a daughter who does competitive cheer, regular cheer, gymnastics, you know, just getting the hair sprayed, putting it in place, make sure it doesn't pop out, is a long process. So I told my wife, I'm like, okay, the girls can go first, then you can go, so that way you can do their hair. I'll take my shower last. Well,
I already see where this is going.
Exact same thing happened. First of all, the girls take such hot showers, there was literal water and steam, condensation on all the walls. It felt like everything was just wet walking in the bathroom. The floor was wet. The toilet was wet. Everything had condensation, steamy condensation. I didn't think about it because I just jumped in the shower, got out, realized, okay, I've got just a sopping wet format from all the girls that had gone before me. I think one of them didn't realize you were supposed to put the shower curtain in the tub. You know how it's got the outer liner and then there's the inner liner. Like the outer one's usually fabric. The inner one's more plastic.
Yeah.
You put the plastic in there. So that way when the shower hits it, it falls in the tub. It was outside the tub. So there was water all over. So I'm sitting on a sopping wet floor mat trying to figure out, okay, I'm not gonna be able to dry my feet because there's no dry flooring. And then I looked at the rack and I was like, are you kidding me? One freaking hand towel is all that was left. Everyone else, because the girls needed one for their hair because they had to put their thing up in the little turban bun and one wrapped around them. So that way they didn't, you know, they could walk outside of the shower and the next one could take their shower. I'm not thinking about it. So two towels go for their heads, two towels for their bodies. My wife takes a towel for her head and her body. All of the towels are gone except for a hand towel. And I'm like, are you? And I literally said through the bathroom, like, are you kidding me? And my wife's like, what? I'm like, there's only one hand towel. And she goes, well, just air dry. You'll be fine. And I'm like, so I have to stand here? And I did the thing where I took the hand towel and literally blotted my whole body, wrung it out, and then tried to pat anything left over and just sat there until I wasn't feeling wet anymore. So I learned from that point forward, either get extra towels if I'm traveling with girls or at least stash one of the towels for me.
Or check before you get in.
Check before I get in. That's a good lesson right there. Yes. But thankfully that's never happened again, but it was because a daughter and her friend, basically one of those girls that's always at the house. So it's almost like a built-in daughter. Anybody who has girls probably knows you've got two or three other girls running around your house at any time, but a wife and two daughters in competitive gymnastics. Yeah. I'm just happy it was the hotel, because I think if we had been staying at a friend's house, they would have used all the hot water in the tank with as much steam it was in that bathroom.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
And do you remember if at the time you thought about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
I did not. I did not at all. Not until we were looking at the minutes coming up this week and you said, you know, if you've got a silly story, I'm like, I've got a perfect one for the end of the week.
All right. Excellent. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you, Alan?
Sure, it's real easy. Just Google The Wilder Ride. We're everywhere by that name. The website is thewilderride.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and then pretty much every podcatcher out there. We do movies of Gene Wilder. The first two seasons were dedicated to movies by minutes format, which includes Young Frankenstein season one and Blazing Saddles season two.
Cool. All right, and you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that might be using to listen to this show. And to find me, just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, or you can just go to our website. So, Alan, once again, I want to thank you. This has been such a fun week. It's been very educational for me and less for you since you apparently know everything that Wikipedia already says about these things. You know, I was able to fill in dates. I guess that was it. You know, you didn't know when things were created, but you know exactly all that information. So that was great.
Toiletries.
There you go. All right. Well,
it's been awesome. Thank you so much for having me back. Really, really appreciate it. And a little bit different than The Great Escape, but one of the greatest all-time comic pairings, and just a pleasure to be part of this.
All right, cool. And hopefully I'll have you back next season for another week of something when I decide what I'm going to do.
If you have me back, I'll be happy to come back. I'll come running.
Ooh, fun. All right. So have a great weekend, everybody. And we'll see you on Monday with a new guest. But until then, you're fun.
And just like what my wife said when I said, oh, come on, you're fun.